Okay, the subject tonight is Dharma and relationships. Sharon, you asked about translation, right? And everyone's okay with Oxford English. Great. And if you can't hear, maybe you're welcome to come closer. There's plenty of space. I think we all know by now that relationships are probably the biggest challenge that we face in terms of our inner life, our inner outer life. They always seem to press our buttons. The people close to us are always pressing our buttons, and we always get brought down by this, and we always think we should be better and we should be above it, and why is it that it's happening to me, and I thought I was already above that. I think the best example you probably all know is Jack Kornfield, when he came back from years of practice in monasteries in Burma, and he came back to America, to London, no, sorry, to New York, really in ecstasy and in very subtle state of mind, and he met his mother. And all of a sudden, everything seemed to crash down again, as if he never went to Burma and he never sat. And he wrote about it in more than one book, I think. And patterns that we don't think that we have are brought out in the relationship. Patterns that we think we dealt with. I remember with my teenage daughter, it was 15 years ago, I'd already been practicing like 15 years, and I thought I was very equanimous and balanced and steady and quiet. Well, she just never ever did the washing up. Not once. At the age of 16, I guess. And I was always washing up after her doing the kalim, always, always. And I began to get this, no, why does every time, why can't once she do the washing up? And it was like, so. And then I got critical of myself, how is it after practicing all these years, and I feel in my tummy so much irritation and anger, and I was fed up with her, and, you know, and even if I didn't say anything, she felt it, and the fact I was angry, she even less did the washing up, like to really to push the button, get the thing coming out. So, and it pulls us out of our peace. The relationships always pull us out of our peace, out of what we want to be, out of how we think we ought to be, and we are shown, in a sense, our real face. So relationships really show us in the mirror who we really are. And the reason is that we spend a lot of our time actually dressing ourselves up in nice clothes, feeling that we're better than we are, feeling we do this automatically, unconsciously. We build a better self because it's uncomfortable. On a very deep level, we don't know we're doing it. It's uncomfortable to feel the patterns need to be brought up, but we don't bring them up in our daily life. They're not convenient. And very deeply we push them away, and the mirror of relationship brings them out. And so we're always getting ourselves facing with insecurity, primal, basic insecurity, existential insecurity, feeling outside our comfort zone in the challenge, in the heat of close relationships with people close to us. How many times in I hear, oh, I'm on this direction, I'm on the Dharma or another path, and I'm going, my partner doesn't practice, or my partner does things differently, or how can I cope with the fact that my partner that I see every day is totally different from me, is going off in other directions? Should I teach my partner how to do vipassana? Why? Or arguments like this. The difference is they're challenging us, they take us out of our comfort zone. But somehow or other, that it, we are more true, the picture is more truthful of who we really are in a relationship. The relationship brings out truth of who we really are, more than when we paint ourselves nice pink colour when we're on our own. So we have to really, first of all, not be critical of ourselves if relationship challenges us and we feel it makes us smaller than we want to be, because we do create for ourselves a place of less threat and less challenge. And so relationships show us truth, a truth of how we really are, so we should thank them. I was interested to read years ago Don Juan, books by Castaneda, and how Don Juan was serving a very controlling woman, and he said to Castaneda, everybody needs a tyrant. In other words, in Hebrew, tyrant. Mm-hmm. Tyrant is a, yeah. Yeah. Everyone needs a tyrant, because that's the alchemy where you burn up areas in the unconscious that you don't usually see. And it's a kind of, you in the heat of control. Well, I hope that your partners and family are not quite as bad as the tyrant. But I'm just using an example of how, in a way, the relationship can really be for us an alchemy, an alchemical vessel, kli alchemia, that shows us how we really are and challenges us all the time and brings us out of our comfort zone, which is exactly what the Buddha did, out of his comfort zone, his castle, his palace. So the relationship is pulling us out of our palace, and for that we have to thank the relationship. So it's a question, what do we do? And if we meet ourselves as we really are, or more truthfully, and it's more difficult for us in a relationship, so what is it that we can do? How do we deal with this situation? So I want to talk tonight in a more general way, and then tomorrow evening perhaps talk more specifically about methods or ways, and through the exercises we do tomorrow we'll perhaps touch some of these ways of ways of learning how to cope with relationship. But I would say the first thing to understand is that we bring to relationship everything that we have up to this point. That we can't necessarily expect to be absolutely wise in relationship if we never built wisdom in our life. So the first thing to understand is we bring to the relationship all the resources that we build in our life. Kol ha-mashabim. Everything that we build in our life, it's there in that moment of the heat of relationship. So we in a way need to think about what resources that we have in relationship, rather than thinking the relationship is just a fight or just a love hate or whatever it is. What resources do I have when I go into relationship? One of the great resources that is the Dharma helps us with is to be open and free and honest about our vulnerability, pigyut, to be right there with our vulnerability and not cover it and not hide it, but to be friends with our vulnerability, because that's a resource then we bring into relationship. See, yes, it's okay to be vulnerable, but this dialogue with vulnerability that we have is a great strength in relationship. The problem in relationship is often that we cover our vulnerability, but if we are friends with our vulnerability, we bring that into the relationship, then we less easy to be wounded, less easy to be hurt, to crack the shirion, the armor that we put up. Yes, I can be vulnerable. It's okay, I know that story. I'm not hiding anything. It's already a resource that we have in relationship. And the other big resource is an ability to let go. And it's also something that we build through our life. It is not terribly difficult to let go if we are not used to letting go. So everything we do here, we practice letting go. We have one breath and we let it go. We have one experience, we let it go. We have a pain in the body, we let it go. We learn to be in the flow of things. This Dharma practice, when we bring it into relationship, it's a big resource. There is a moment of anger between you and your partner, and it's gone. And how much issues in relationship are about building, are about this anger building on that anger, this building on that, building on that, building on that, everything building, 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 until the whole thing has to, there's no other place to go except. So if we learn, and we can't really learn it in the relationship, it's very difficult to learn in the relationship when right in the heat. We learn it here and in our daily life and in our experience and in our wisdom, we learn the skill of letting go. And this is another resource we can bring to relationship. Yeah, okay, I was hurt, boom, gone, that was 5 minutes ago. Possible, because this is our practice. So it's a big resource in relationship, is letting go. I think that another major resource is what the Buddha said, be an island to yourself. The last words of the Buddha were, be an island to yourself. And it's something that maybe we'll talk about more tomorrow, but if we are can be steady in the eye of the storm, en asera, we're right in the middle of the storm and we are steady, we are an island. We just stand steady in the middle of the whole craziness of relationships, It's a resource that we build in our life. It's a primary resource, actually. In a way, unless we're steady, it's very hard even to practice meditation. It's a steadiness is a core resource that we bring to our spiritual life and we bring to our emotional life. And it's something which is like standing steady in the middle of all the change and the difficulty and the heat and the emotions and so on. Be an island to yourself. It's the last words of the Buddha. It's got to be, it's his dying words, basically. It's got to be important. And it's a resource. And that's what the Buddha said. It's be an island to yourself and now practice with determination. So I think it's a very important resource in relationships. I thought about it the other night. I was just sitting with another of my daughters and discussing some issues, and we put the fire on, a wood fire, and so we were sitting in front of the wood fire, and the fact that there were two of us in front of the fire and the flames and we were watching the fire, something in there was steady and peaceful, and all the problems that we were talking about, the difficulties and so on, life difficulties, seemed to just, we could handle it. And it wasn't because we wanted to we just somehow, there was something steady and quiet that made things different. And I was thinking about it, it was just a few days ago, at the beginning of the cold, cooler weather that we... So, here are some of the resources that will in a way turn our relationship from a prison. Sometimes it's a prison, and sometimes it's a garden. And we want to turn it from a prison to a garden. And it's these resources we bring into the relationship that do it. So there are two, in the Dharma there are basically two great wheels that are turning. One is the wisdom path and the other is the love path. And they're always interconnected and related. They're sometimes regarded as the two wings of the bird. And what does the wisdom path tell us about relationships? What are some of the insights that the wisdom of Dharma wisdom? One great wisdom that is inherent in the Dharma is that we are always made by others, and we make others, we make each other, we are not made alone. Each one of us is the result of all the voices and all the influences and all the mother's milk, chalav em, and all that what we've received all our life has made us what we are, and we make others. And this, the wisdom path in the Dharma is always about flow. It's always about how we interact and we flow with life and with it. It's a non-self wisdom, and it's always about flow, interaction, movement. So we, in a way, there's no such thing as a person. There is only relationship. We are in relation at every moment. We are being made by life, and we are making. Life is making us, we are making others. Our partners are making us, we are making them. And that's a view. It's a kind of a meta, English meta, like big view of who we are. That changes things. Because if we realize how we make others and they make us, our relationships will be different. We'll be more careful, or we'll be more understanding, or we'll watch the situation more deeply. We'll see the way we influence others and they influence us. We cannot make ourselves on our own. There's no such thing as being alone. I mean, we can be alone, but then we're alone with all the life around us. So we're not really alone. We are in relationship. Our ta'im, our cells, are in relationship. We are, our molecules are the molecules of the world. Our molecularim, they are going in and out. Oxygen coming in and out. So molecules, mind, consciousness, thoughts, language, everything comes from out and goes out. And so we're just a moving, coming from an old English expression, a movable feast, like a meal that is always moving. So, the wisdom path asked us to consider. Now we're alone, not really alone, but so we say, we're by ourselves, and now we're with others, and now we're by ourselves, and now we're with others. What is it that's bigger than both? What is it that is happening to us, whether we are alone or with others? That big perspective, what is bigger than one? And it was an example of being in total relationship, that there's only relationship, there isn't anything else, there isn't things in the world. That's like holding, whether we're alone or with others, we hold that vision or that understanding. So the wisdom is also wisdom that this is painful. The first noble truth of the Buddha is that we can't escape into paradise. We can't get there without being wounded. So we're all wounded in some way. And just by living, dukkha, difficulty, and in relationships, of course, we experience it. So one of the aspects of wisdom is to be, as I say, friends with dukkha. That knowing dukkha or difficulty or dissatisfaction is our partner as we struggle to live, as we make the effort to live. And in relationships, difficulty can be a friend and not an enemy. In some way or other, the difficulty in relationship is when relationship really begins. When you know that, when you go, there's a first sort of wonderful ecstasy with the relationship, or a marriage, or a partnership, or have a new baby, or whatever. There's a first sort of holiday period, and then the difficulty starts. And it's then that the relationship really begins. I remember also a personal story of a very passionate relationship I had when I was a student. And I remember one night, such a passionate relationship when I was in Oxford as a student. One night, I stood in the snow from 8 o'clock in the evening until 4 o'clock in the morning, waiting for my girlfriend to turn up, because I didn't want her to find me in the house. I wanted to meet her in the street. And I was so determined, I stood there under a tree for 7 hours in the snow. It was so stupid. Completely. But the passion and the, you know, the passion. But then when things got difficult between us, we couldn't handle it. We couldn't handle the difficulty. So in some way or other, the relationship depended, I know, yeah, hormonim. It depended on hormones, it depended on something, illusion. It couldn't sustain itself. And things got difficult, and that was the end of the relationship. So relationship really begins with the difficulty. And I think that wisdom of dukkha as a necessary part of our lived experience, and not a problem, and not an enemy, and not something we feel guilty about, but something that is natural and existential, is wisdom of dukkha. And observing it, knowing it, being a friend with it, not an enemy. And if the two people in a relationship can feel like that about dukkha, then the relationship is really can have a great depth. Sometimes I don't mean that relationship has to be there. And don't get me wrong, that all relationships need to be healed. Sometimes you say, no, it's healthy, we split up. But the question is, if we are careful enough to understand the relationship at the different levels, and maybe there's a model that we can have of like a pyramid, or like a cajon, iceberg, where at the top is our tavniyot, our tendencies, our patterns, our reactions. And that underneath a little bit is our story, who we are, our stories, our history. Underneath there a little bit is our automatic reactions. And underneath there is a deepest level, under the water, I would say, our deepest motivations and our consciousness and our awareness and our love, which is perhaps the deeper level. And I think we need a kind of to know where all these levels are. And sometimes we relate at the top level and the things don't really work, but the bottom level works. And then we can have two people who are so different at the level of story, but under there is a power of love or a power of connection which is deeper. If the power of connection is on the deeper level doesn't really work, then yes, maybe the relationship has to stop. It's okay. But it's a shame if a relationship has to stop because of the top of the level, top level. The irritation, oh, my husband doesn't do the washing up. My daughter doesn't do the washing up. I don't know what, the irritating stories or differences. My wife is different from me, or my husband is different from me. I remember that my wife and myself used to have this kind of slogan of running from each other to each other, meaning running from each other at the top of the iceberg, the patterns and the reactions and the sort of irritations, because she's extremely different from me, she's a totally different type, so we're all the time bumping into each other. But we run from the top, the stories and the patterns, and to the bottom, to the deepest connection. And so running away from the top into the bottom. And the bottom level of real connection, which is maybe destiny, maybe we're meant to be together, there's something that happens there which we don't question, which is an absolute, which is a rightness. Is the ground of the relationship, the deeper ground. And it needs the wisdom to see that. And sometimes, yeah, a person can be very irritating next to us, day and night. They're just doing the wrong things, or different paths. That base, like the weight, is important. And from there, you can argue that, but then you laugh at it afterwards. you can see there's differences and you can enjoy the differences. I think sometimes the best relationships are those in which the two people are different, or the family, or the relationships, any, you know, family relationships or friends, where actually there's a big difference, because that makes the challenges and the interest and the aliveness. Rather, there's a tendency to say, oh, I'm married, the person next door is just like me, we are definitely intended to be for each other because we're so similar. I think it's more interesting to get married to someone that's really different from you, and then there's fire and interest and you do bump into each other, but then you find a place of common ground on a deeper level. So I don't know if this touches any of you here, because some of you probably have relationships people like you, and some of you have relationships people not like you. So I don't know, you know, you can think about it in your own lives. Fundamentally, the relationships are healed or are supported by this ground is not only love. This deeper ground is also space, is also the freedom that we give to the other to be themselves. That is where the letting go happens. So you allow the other to be themselves next to you. It only feeds you, but it's also a threat. So the wisdom asks you, just let go of the threat. See, there is a threat, someone close to you doing things differently and so on. It presses buttons, but see that this difference is a sort of nutrition, hazana. It's makes interest, and it makes interest if there's space, if you can give space, because you're free from the threat and you can give space to the other to be themselves. And more than that, you can give encouragement to the other to grow. And in a way, relationship's not worth it unless you encourage the other to grow. I mean, I think that's probably the only point to relationships. If you're not doing that, it's sort of better to be on your own. But to encourage, to help the other grow and be a bigger person is in a way the function of a relationship. But it is only on that level under the water, not on the level at the top of the iceberg or the kirchon of patterns and tendencies and the things that we bump into each other. And we have to take ourselves lightly. The wisdom path in the Dharma is always telling us, take yourself lightly. Don't take yourself heavy, too serious, to a person. Your boundaries, your defenses, haganot, don't need them. Don't need them. Then they don't help you. Be less solid, be less of a person with the boundaries, and be light. And these are some of the tools that also we're going to talk about in this next couple of days. So that's perhaps the wisdom side. And the love side is something deep in the heart. I asked my wife, how would you describe it? She said, Ahava bat hashamayim. I think, I guess it's poetic, or the love side is based on metta in the Pali, meaning a stream of love from the heart that actually is not stopped, is not dependent on conditions, is not stuck if the conditions aren't right. The love side is also beyond what I want, what I need, my defenses, my expectations, or what I want back from somebody. If I love them, I need back something. So it's only conditional. I will love providing I am loved. I will love providing I get respect, or providing a certain language is used by my partner. My partner doesn't use this language, starts saying the wrong things to me, not da da da, the love goes. The love in relationship is unconditional. The love in the Dharma perspective is just happening. It's just that, and really, then, just to give love is the greatest thing for you, for us, to give love, whether it's returned or not returned. Actually, it doesn't make any difference. So the love side is metta, is giving love for the sake of giving love. And of course this heals relationships, this helps relationships, it's just healing, cleansing, transforming power. It's based on understanding that even though the other person is different or seems to be different, actually we're the same. We are together. We share the same pain. As soon as you see that the partner is hurting like you, the love can start, or the compassion can start. If you don't see the partner is hurting, but you feel only you are hurt, the love stops, or the love is conditional. But it helps to see you are together, always together in whatever happens. There's some togetherness, even share if you share difficulty, it's shared, it's both. It's never one side, it's both. And there the love starts again. Yes, we are together in difficulty. Even if we cause each other difficulty, we make, because of our patterns, we can't help it, we shout at each other because of the tavniot. But that, we can look at it from the love and say, okay, that's a human being. We're both human beings together. We are together. And the love starts again, even in the middle of a shout. So the Dharma also asks us to behave and feel deeply that we are each other's mother, we are each other's father, we are each other's child, because that there's a truth in it, that we are always feeding and giving to each other, whether we like it or not. And metta is being a mother to each other, being a father to each other, being a child to each other. It's all of that wrapped in this moment of connection. And if we can encourage that inside us, this sense of being a mother, feeding each other like a mother, that's metta, that heals relationships. So I want to finish, I want to quote this article that I sent you called Mama Nivarana. And she says that she had a view of Nirvana as being something that only being a monastery is possible, that it needs a deep concentration and deep awakening and deep practice and so on. She says, for me, Nirvana now seems far broader and includes life in all its messiness, changing the millionth dirty nappy diaper for her daughter with care and patience, waking up again and again, since I have no more self left to care about sleeping, bathing in the love, the undeniable sweet baby metta, suffusing every second, suffusing means spreading inside every second, living in an infant, a baby's natural presence, and tuning in to her moment after moment, seeing the astonishing passing nature of things before my own eyes, without missing a moment. Yes, all this might have a teeny bit of the scent of enlightenment. Perhaps a mild scent, a breeze, or maybe more. I used to think I wouldn't be able to practice if I were to have children. Perhaps the better question would have been, how can I not practice? Maybe these are all the late night ramblings of a sleep-deprived new mother. Even so, I can't help wondering, if the Buddha had been a mother, wouldn't she have shared the very same Dharma, the Mama Nivarana Sutta, of the awakening that comes through a baby? Okay, so that's it for a few minutes.